guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness. First off, I want to wish you a very happy new year, and I also want to welcome you to episode 15, I believe, I might be wrong, of the 30 Plus Men's Fitness podcast. Now, I've had some great feedback about these podcasts, and especially the guests that I got on towards the latter end of last year, the likes of Martin McDonald and Renzo Algieri. We did one great one with Paul Moore and also Dax Moy. And people keep asking me, Treggs, when's the next podcast? What's going on? They're really good, but you don't seem to do them regularly enough. So at the end of last year, I sat down with Russ and Anthony, and I said to guys, keep me accountable. I am going to do 2 podcasts a month for the entirety of for the entirety of 2017, which will equate to 24 great podcasts with some wonderful guests, which are going to give you guys, my followers, some great value. And they said, right, okay, Treggs, we're going to hold you accountable to that. And I said, look, I've already planted the seeds. I've got my first 2 guests. Now, the first guest, he's actually sat with me now, virtually. He's not next to me. He's got his headphones on. We're on Skype. I started to follow this guy last year. I was really enjoying his Facebook Lives. And he was really sort of, reminded me a little bit myself, quite loud, likes to swear quite a lot. And the first one I tuned in on, I was getting some great value, but he was swearing so much, I actually had to turn off because I was with my son at the time. And I left the comment and I said, hey, you know what, great value, but I had to turn it off because you're swearing at my son. And rather than be a dick like some people, and they said, well, that's just me if you don't like it, he was really cool. He said, Mark, I'm really sorry about that. I just get really passionate about it, and I apologize if your son heard anything. I thought, what a great guy. So I continued to follow him. And he seemed to just grow and grow and grow throughout 2016. You couldn't escape him. So just before Christmas, I dropped him a PM saying, hey, would you like to come on the podcast? And within 5 minutes, he responded to me. Said, yeah, let's do it. So this is my first guest of 2017. Before I introduce him, all the guys in my community are saying, bloody hell, Treggs, how did you pull that off? This is a major coup for 30 Plus Men's Fitness. And I said, well, I just dropped him a PM, so we must have some pull. And they're all really, really excited to listen to it. And I'm buzzing to say we've got Jamie Alderton here on the podcast. How are you, Jamie?
I'm good, thanks, Mark. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm really chuffed that we
Happy New Year and all that.
Yeah, and to you, buddy. I'm really chuffed that we can kick off 2017 with you on. You seem to be really hot property at the minute. You've got a book out on Amazon, which we're going to talk about, Mindset with Muscle, which, as I just told you before we started recording, I've tried my best to read over Christmas. Regular sit-downs on the toilet so my 2 boys don't come and hassle me. You've absolutely blown up on social media, and you seem to be all over the place. Now, like I said to you before we started recording, my followers are... We've got a whole host of followers. Some of them are, you know, ripped over 30s guys that are training regularly and fully into this whole fitness thing. But a lot of our guys that are just coming into our funnel are what we call self-proclaimed couch potatoes. They're not doing anything, you know, life's got in the way, and they may not have their eye on the fitness game like a lot of guys do, and they may not have heard of you. So Jamie, I want you to introduce yourself to our followers. Tell us everything about you, who you are, and then we're going to delve into it.
Okay, so I'm going to try and keep this pretty short. So, hey guys, my name's Jamie Alderton. I'm an ex-British Army soldier. I left the Army December 2009. I spent a couple of years not knowing exactly what I wanted to do. I was doing a lot of contract work out in the Middle East and in Kenya and Somalia. I worked for the UN as a security advisor. Then, I think it was 2012, the best thing ever happened to me. I got a phone call in Kenya telling me I'd been made redundant. And I was just like, really shit. Yeah, what's going on? I did stitch myself up. I just bought a nice 3-story house with a wife. All of the money that I'd saved had gone into that. But I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, I've got 2 more years of this contract work, lots of nice money coming in. And then suddenly 2 weeks later, nothing. So I was getting the plane back in 2012, not knowing exactly what it was I wanted to do. And probably the best thing that I'd ever done in my life was to write some shit down. What is it that I wanted to do? Now, something that was slapping me in the face was something that I had been passionate about for many, many years, and that was personal training. Now, I had this thought process in my head to never follow your passion because you'll end up resenting it. Now, some people that does, you know, ring true, but a lot of people it doesn't. And I remember why I thought like that, and it was because I kept seeing all these miserable bastard PTs everywhere, you know, just not happy and not passionate with their job. So I was just like, I don't want to do that. And I knew if I, or at least I thought that if I did that, I would hate it. But something happened when I decided to follow my passion and dream. I absolutely loved what it was that I did. I worked harder than I'd ever worked in my life. And in 4 years, I, you know, grew this massive online business and this coaching business, transforming men and women. So much so that July last year, I kind of closed the studio 18 months ago and opened up my dream gym facility, which is Grenade Fit. So now I'm sort of out of the PT role and focusing more on sort of coaching my trainers and more of a transformation coach, not just body, but mind too.
Fantastic. For the guys that are listening in, tell us a little bit about, well, where is the gym? Where's the gym based?
So the gym's based down in Chichester, right, in West Sussex. Perfect. So just on the coast.
Okay, so we're gonna talk about the gym a lot later on. But one thing that really sticks out for me is you talk about the military. Now, we have an abundance of ex-military guys, as you would imagine, with a big community of thousands of over 30s men. This is going to really interest the guys. So let's talk about what led you to get into the military. Tell us about your time in the military and what did it teach you?
So when I was at school, I had, you know, I was a little shit, if I'm being honest. You know, I did not know what I wanted to do in life. I had a very short attention span. And, you know, I was just like, I scraped through college, literally scraped through college. I did a 2-year course, only managed to scrape the first year. And I was just like, where do I go from here? I knew if I went to university, I would just end up being a full-time alcoholic because my attention span is so crap. I thought, right, if I'm going to make something of myself, I need to be told what to do. I need to be forced to do it. So, you know, for me, it was an easy thing to go, right, I liked my technology. I didn't like being shouted at. I hated being told what to do, but I needed some discipline. So I joined the army. I traded in the Royal Signals as a communication systems operator. I did 7 years service there. I did a tour of Canada, did a tour of Baghdad too. So I did 6 months in Iraq and had a brilliant time. I really, really enjoyed it. But I always looked at it as a stepping stone onto something else. I never looked at it as a career. And I was married at the still married, but I got married sort of 2 years before I left. And I said to my wife, I will leave when I stop enjoying it.
Wow.
And I just got to that stage where I was just like, there's more to life than this. Decided to leave in December 2009. And I think that was sort of the age of 24, I left to 26. And that was really trying to find my purpose, what it was that I wanted to do. Because from the age of 17, I had such a strong identity in being a soldier and being about that. And then suddenly I'm this civilian and I don't know what, I have no identity. I'm not a part of anything. And, you know, it was kind of a big 2 years of soul searching, not knowing what it was that I wanted to do until, of course, I found personal training, until I found coaching, until I found my actual purpose. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of military people find difficult, that sure, they're part of this big green machine, so to speak. And then they leave that and they lose that camaraderie. They lose that kind of, you know, all the principles that are part of the military, and they lose a part of themselves. So, you know, I speak to a lot of soldiers about that, you know, trying to get them to understand their purpose and identity and to channel that energy that they had from the military into something else.
So you talk about you really enjoyed your time in like Baghdad and Iraq. Tell us, did you see any action or was it pretty low key? I mean, tell us a little bit more about that.
So I was based in Saddam's old palace in the Green Zone. Now, it's very different Iraq to Afghanistan. Iraq at that time in 2008 was very much rocket attacks. Right. So I was actually, you know, funny enough, in the Green Zone, yeah, it was quite red in there in the fact that, you know, we were getting 20 to 30 mortar attacks a day. So it kind of, the first week you're there, you kind of shit yourself because you're hearing all these whistles around, everything blowing up next to you, car bombs going off, and you're just like, what the fuck is this?
Wow.
But about a month later, 2 months later, you kind of get used to it. Had a couple of hairy moments there. But
really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really, really did. I say enjoyment. I think the one thing that I realized 6 months being away really was how little life changes in that time.
Right.
Because I remember coming back after about 4 months and speaking to my mates, and I was just like, "So what have you been up to?" And this, for example, sure, I'd done a lot of shit in 4 months.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot. I come back and I said to my mates, "So what have you been up to?" And they go, "Not a lot. Dave got arrested last week, but apart from that, fuck all."
Yeah.
One thing that made me realise was that so many people are kind of not willing to commit to something for a period of time because they think 4 to 6 months is a long time. In actual fact, it isn't.
No.
And you can get a lot of shit done in 4 to 6 months. You can literally transform your life in that period of time. And I think that's that kind of realisation to me that anything that I'm committing to, you know, you're not wasting your life. You know, because most people are wasting their life. And it sort of triggered a little switch in me to say, look, you know, if there's something that you want to do, commit to it, make those sacrifices, because most people aren't willing to do so.
Sure. Well, I mean, if nothing changes, nothing changes, as Paul Mort once told me. So let's talk about how you actually got into fitness, because I know you've done fitness modeling, you've competed, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing I haven't picked up on yet, Jamie, is when you actually got into it. So what were you into training before you went to the army? Because, I mean, I remember sort of being 15 or 16 and discovering the gym with my friend, and we were just addicted, you know, like in there doing every body part and thousands of sit-ups and stuff like that. What was your sort of entry into lifting weights? Did that happen before or during your time in the military?
Well, I've always been, ever since I was small, super, super competitive.
Right.
And I'd love to tell you that I was one of these fat to fit kids, but I wasn't.
Right.
I had abs at 13. I was, you know, a little bit of a freak, but I was in my lunch break going to the gym at 13 for 2 hours.
Wow.
Even the most strangest thing was all I would train when I was 13, 14 was legs.
Really?
Because it was my strongest thing. I did a paper round for 4 years. I did a double paper round where I'd cycle 6 miles a day and my legs just blew up.
Wow.
And it was the kind of thing where you show off to your mates. I remember my friends sitting on the leg press and leg pressing them. It was I found this thing which I was good at.
Yeah.
And I continued to do it. And I think a lot of it spanned from if you look right back, when I was sort of 9 or 10, I got bullied a lot.
Right.
And it was that thing where, well, you know, if I lift weights and I'm big, then it's that kind of protection thing.
Sure.
But what happens from a young age like that is it just becomes a part of you, becomes part of your identity, it becomes part of your life. So you have such strong subconscious habits about going to the gym, about exercising, that, you know, you don't make those conscious decisions where you're like, oh, I've got to go to the gym now, I've got to go exercise. It just happens. And
yeah,
that's one thing that I explain to a lot of people when it comes to habit building, is that it is possible. You know, when you look at other habits such as going to the gym and you compare it to habits such as brushing your teeth, driving your car, these are all things that you wake up and you don't necessarily have to make conscious actions to do. You just do it.
Yeah.
And one thing that I say in the book is that you can condition yourself to do that with fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. So you obviously got into the gym then at the age of sort of 13, carried that on. So what did you get any qualifications in the military? I mean, did you come out of PTI? Did you regularly lift weights during your time in the military? Was there a program, anybody that you followed that helped you develop?
No, not really. I mean, it was something that I'd always done. Ever since I joined the army, I'd always been lifting weights. I was always that crazy soldier that would be doing all the training sessions. We'd literally come, we'd do like an 8 to 10 mile, 30-pound yomp across whatever. And then as soon as we finished that, I'd be in the gym lifting weights and be like, you know, I absolutely loved fitness.
Yeah.
You know, and I always did. I always kind of what you could class as overtraining. Just loved it. Used to drink a lot as well, but then that used to burn the calories off on a Saturday and Sunday with a nice long run.
Yeah.
So it's something that I've always been passionate about. One thing that used to confuse me when I was in the army is I would see all these magazines of all these ripped people, and you know, I was fit, I was strong, but I didn't have the body that they had, and I was really confused. I was just looking at them and go, I train harder than him. How does he look like that? And I look like this. And it wasn't until obviously I left the army and started competing that I realized how important nutrition was to get that body.
Sure.
I had all the trainings kind of sussed. I had the passion for that and the consistency, but I just didn't understand nutrition. I didn't understand, you know, I didn't, have a clue what a macro was. I thought it was some cash and carry place.
Great stuff. So, okay, so you come out of the army. So you decided to get qualified as a personal trainer. You didn't do that in the army.
No, I didn't. I mean, I left the army in 2009 and, you know, as I said, it wasn't something that I... You have a lot of resettlement money in the army.
Right.
So I had about £3,000 to go and do a course. Now, stupid me, and this is one thing that I say to a lot of people about business, is that I thought, right, what do I want to do when I leave the army? And instead of looking at something I was passionate about doing, I looked at something that paid the most money.
Right.
So I looked at advanced networking. And I was like, oh, that's £50,000 a year. That's a good job. I'll just go and get qualified in those, you know, that, and I'll be earning 50 grand a year, and I'll be all good. And... Yeah, I fucking hated it.
Right.
Advanced networking, difficult stuff to actually kind of enjoy.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of wasted that. And I fortunately got a job working abroad in the Middle East and for the UN just because of my security clearance.
Okay. So this was after the army?
No, that wasn't. This was as a private contractor.
Wow. Okay, tell us a little bit more about that because that sounds very interesting. So obviously, insecurity...
Yeah, so I used to work in the Middle East for a communications company as security manager and in Somalia and Mogadishu too.
Wow.
Now, there's a lot of life lessons that I learned from a lot of these kind of countries, especially Somalia. Somalia is one of the most dangerous countries in the world, yet the people there are the most amazing.
Right.
They have literally nothing. But they're always happy, they're always smiling, and they're always grateful.
Right.
And that's something that always blew me away about them. And, you know, I get the plane back to London, and then I see people pissed off that they've only got 10% left on their iPhones.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was just like, oh, come on. You know, really. And you know, it's something that I practice a lot. You know, a lot of people talk about meditation and gratitude and affirmations and all this. And a lot of people see... You know, they have a vision in their head of someone with long hair and joss sticks doing it all and that. And it's not, you know, the problem that we have in the UK is that we're so skeptical about these things and we're not willing to embrace these things. And, you know, so many people aren't willing to be self-aware of their problems.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a problem, it's the normal British thing to keep calm and carry on, not tell anyone to deal with it. And it's just like, fuck off. Seriously, look, you're not fooling anyone here. And, you know, the amount of, obviously, guys that you work with, Mark, that, you know, they're kind of in denial about it. And it's not until they become honest with themselves that they have a problem, that they need help, that they can start to make a change. And I think it's the word problem, really. You know, people don't like to let people know that they have problems.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, if you don't have problems in your life, then you don't have a life.
Yep.
You know, you are literally bullshitting yourself. Everyone has problems, and as soon as you solve all your problems, you'll have more problems. The only way that you're actually going to be able to deal with them is obviously address them.
Sure, I'm with you. No, I think you make a very valid point there. I mean, I say to most people I meet every day that every person that I work with, in person, coaching, online, everyone's got problems. Everyone has got problems. And, you know, I've had my fair share of problems over the years, especially with the kids growing up. And I've found that my way to obviously deal with that is through exercise and trying to eat healthy 80, 90% of the time. Not always easy. We'll talk about becoming a parent soon. But one thing I want to really delve into is you got into competing. And I read in the book that, and this is really blew me away, you just said you just found it easy with the discipline. Now, I did quite a lot of training last year with my mentor, Renzo Algieri, and I watched him prep for Mr. Universe as an over 50s competitor, and just the discipline that he showed was incredible. And I often said this in my groups, is like, I wish I had that kind of discipline. I could never apply that kind of discipline. Tell us about your competing and, you know, how you went about it with such discipline and focus.
So when I left the army in December 2009, sort of 2010, I was, you know, a little bit lost. I was training at a gym. I didn't really have that kind of routine that I had in the army. I mean, the army routine is quite easy. You do 6 months, you know, getting ready for operations. You spend 6 months deploying on operations, and then you usually spend 6 months on regimental duties.
Right.
So you always kind of know what you're doing, and you've always got something to kind of look forward to. But then when I left the army, I had nothing to really look forward to or a routine to be in, and I most certainly didn't have a sergeant shouting at me. Shouting behind my shoulder anymore. So suddenly I was training in the gym, and the guy in there said, hey, you're in pretty good shape. You should do a competition. And, I asked what on earth he was on about. And,
sure.
He did proceed to tell me that it was just standing in front of 1,000 people in a pair of Speedos flexing. So as you can imagine, that didn't really float my boat too much.
No.
But he said, look, it's a local show. It's a natural bodybuilding competition. You know, just give it a go. And I was just like, right. Let's give it a go. So, got the diet plan, wrote a little meal plan, wrote a little training plan, and I loved it.
So how long was it for this first plan? 12 weeks out or 20 weeks or something?
Yeah, it was about 13 weeks I did. Did the show, came second.
Wow.
Qualified for the British finals, and in September I did another show, Musclemania, and I won the British novice title. So the third show I'd ever done, I became British champion.
Wow.
So it was quite an amazing thing to see. Right, wow, this is amazing. This discipline produces a result.
Yes.
And I'm able to do and discipline this thing that not a lot of other people can do. And it was a kind of, I just kind of switched that identity now from being a soldier to being a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And, that was me. That was what I was about. And it's one thing that I say to a lot of people about a key driver for motivation. Once it becomes a part of you, it's very easy. You're very easily motivated to do it.
Sure.
I mean, you don't tell a tennis player that he's got to go and play tennis. He just does it. You don't go and tell a bodybuilder he's got to go and lift weights. He just does it. And it's understanding those kind of motivations. And this is something that I speak about to a lot of people, kind of the four stages of motivation. First one is actually being at an identity level. Sorry, the highest one is an identity level. The first one is actually at an intellectual level. So we all know that if we eat too much food, we'll gain weight. We all know that smoking's bad. It can obviously give us health problems, but it doesn't mean that we're motivated to stop or to exercise. So most people know what they're doing wrong, but they're not motivated to change it. And that's usually that kind of intellectual level. The next level that usually goes up with a kind of motivation is an emotional level.
Sure.
So, your doctor's telling you that, you've got type 2 diabetes, so you need to look after yourself. A family member dies of cancer, and you suddenly go, fuck, this thing's real. So you're emotionally motivated to make that change. But as with any kind of emotion, your emotions change. It doesn't necessarily motivate you forever to make that change. And obviously, from that emotional level, you get to that identity level where it becomes a part of you. So that's something that I get people to try and understand, is where they are currently with their pain in order to focus on making that progress.
Yes. So is the pain of staying the same, are you prepared to go through the pain of change?
Yeah.
So one thing that I've said a lot recently to clients with this, especially in January, is everyone seems super motivated to make a change. Yeah. And motivation gets you started, but discipline keeps you going. So tell us about the discipline and the real hard times when you were on prep. What did you find? Be completely honest. What did you find the toughest, or did you find it quite easy? There must have been some pretty tough times before you got on stage. I mean, I've seen guys prep, and I know how energy-less they become as they get a bit closer.
So, yeah, I mean, when I was getting ready for competitions, it does get to a certain stage where I couldn't even pick up my daughter.
Wow.
I would be...
So you were competing during... Because she's what, 5'6"?
She's 3.
Oh, sorry. She's 3. Oh, right. So it's very, very recently then. Okay.
So I was saying, this wasn't last year, it was the year before.
Right.
I'd gone through a huge transformation. So in 2013, my wife was pregnant. I decided to get pregnant with her.
I saw this, yeah. Yeah.
Boomed up to a nice 231 pounds from my usual 190.
Wow.
And really had a good year. Plenty of Guinness, plenty of fun, and it was an enjoyable year. But 2014, it was back to business, and it was kind of to prove a point, because a lot of people had looked and gone, oh, Jamie's past it now. And I was just like, no, I'm just getting warmed up.
Yeah.
Watch 2014, it's going to be a game changer. And I remember going to one of the shows and people were like, yeah, all right, Jay, whatever. And it was a kind of prove it, I'll show you kind of thing. So I pushed it hard. You know, I got into the most ridiculous shape I'd ever been in my life. And it came at a cost. At the end of the day, you know, I did push really, really hard. Energy levels for about 5 weeks was really difficult. You know, I was struck. It's very strange is that you're very motivated to hit the gym, but anything else outside of that, you become, you conserve your energy, so to speak. Sure. So I could easily pick, 140 kilos off the ground with deadlifts, but I couldn't pick my daughter up for 5 minutes to take her around the shops.
Sure.
And it's a weird kind of mentality. But for me, it's something I've always been good at. I've always been able to push myself mentally. And it's always been very hard to try and explain to someone
yes.
where that comes from and what that is. When I speak to a lot of other soldiers, they get it because you have to kind of switch a part of your brain off when you deploy in operations because you won't be able to cope.
Right.
If you're going away to Iraq or Afghanistan for 6 months, you've got to understand that there is a, there is a potential that you're not coming back.
Sure.
So you have to kind of shut down a certain part of your brain and just get on with the job. It's something that a lot of soldiers will obviously relate to, but obviously something that they can do quite easily at the flick of a button.
Yes.
It's something that I got very good at doing, a little bit too much if I'm being honest. And, you know, it's something that's, it's probably only the last 2 years I've started to kind of balance out.
Sure.
You know, when I was competing, I used to block everyone out, block my friends, my family out, and get the job done, so to speak. But then obviously when Eliza came along, I couldn't do that because she doesn't know her dad's prepping for a show. So in 2014, it was a kind of balancing act with Eliza and focusing on my time. And that's where I kind of got my balance back. Although my energy levels were down, you know, I wasn't as extreme as I was the years before.
Sure.
And I actually got in better shape. So it was that kind of realization that you don't need to go to brutal extremes in order to get that result. And obviously this is how I live my life now. You know, I stay in very good shape year round. I like my Grey Goose. I like my, McDonald's. But because I track, because I exercise and train hard, you know, I've got a good balance of my life and stay in great shape.
Well, we're gonna come on to your day-to-day nutritional habits soon. But one thing I did want to talk about was I was watching yesterday on YouTube your six-month transformation. So for the guys, you know, you just told them you ballooned up and then you trim right down. It was just sensational. There's loads of these transformations out there on the internet, but what I'm really interested in is how did you feel mentally, emotionally, energy-wise when you're at your heaviest? Because I know you were still lifting, obviously, because I've seen a picture of you at your heaviest, but you still look okay. There's lots of muscle there. Because there's a lot of guys coming into this now that are overeating, they're overdrinking, they're probably absolutely fuck all energy. Tell us what changes from going from a super fit guy to this guy whacked on all this weight. What did that do to you?
To be honest, I mean, I didn't find it too bad because I've got quite a strong sense of self.
Sure.
And I knew what was coming. I knew I was going to get back in shape. And I think it's a lot easier because although I'm, sort of 50 pounds overweight, I'm already a professional fitness model. I'd already won my pro card. I'd already proven to myself that I can do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real disconnect between a lot of people is that when you haven't proven to yourself that you can do it, there is that level of uncertainty to ask yourself the question, can I?
Right.
So for myself, it was like, next year I'll be all right. However, the kind of mindset was, you do convince yourself a lot that certain things are okay. Like, it's okay to go down the pub and have six pints of beer because everyone else does that. It's okay not to go to the gym, not to go on a walk, not to all these things that actually help you mentally as well as physically as well. And I think a lot of guys suffer with that. You know, I speak to a lot of clients in that, you know, they're very naive to the fact that what fitness and health and that is actually about. You know, they've got these preconceived ideas about all these meatheads with stringers on, superiority complexes and that. And to me, that's not what the gym's about. You know, the whole bodybuilding side and that can be very extreme, but that's not what my gym facility is about. You know, we have a high-end facility for everyday people. You know, there's not a single stringer in sight. And it's about understanding what this whole fitness malarkey actually is.
Yeah.
And it's about enjoying yourself. It's about being able to set goals and achieve them. It's about self-confidence. It's about self-acceptance and awareness.
Yeah.
And to me, it's a strong sense of community. Yeah. It's something that I had in the military and something that I really preach and practice a lot with the community of the guys in my gym too.
Yeah, I did see that. You've got a limited membership, haven't you? I saw it on the Ben Coomer show. It's like 50 at the time when you were talking to him.
Yes, it's 50 at the time. We're going to up it to 60 soon. Yeah. But we keep it very close in it, you know, and it's great because we do have a lot of people down, but you know, you'll have a stranger in the gym and everyone knows that they're a stranger, yeah. So they go up and talk to them. And it's like, wow, yeah, it's amazing because, you know, it is a very kind of semi-private place.
Yeah.
And everyone speaks to each other and it's exactly how I envisioned a gym facility. No egos, there's no kind of, you know, awkwardness. Everyone speaks to each other, everyone's happy, you know, and everyone communicates, which is great.
That's exactly what we're trying to do with 30 Plus. Now, going on to the gym, it's called Grenade Fit. A lot of people know you as Grenade J. We've all heard of the Grenade products. Their pre-workout is awesome. It's helped me through many a session when I haven't had much sleep. Tell us how this whole affiliation with Grenade came about.
So this happened in 2010. So I'd left the army for about 4 or 5 months. I was getting ready for my first bodybuilding show and I went to the Body Power in 2010. And there was Alan Jules, who owned Grenade. That was their first ever expo of Grenade showing off their fat burner.
Wow.
And they were by the main stage, and I remember they had a tops off competition. I was 6 weeks out from my I think it was about 5 weeks out from my show, and
feeling good.
I was like, I'll go up there. And we actually got, I think it was about six guys and one woman, and we got beaten by a woman. And she didn't take a top off either. So I don't know how she won, but you know, Alan sort of saw something in me then, and he saw that guy's going to be. Yeah, I think he's got something there. I got down, we started chatting. He had this massive tank there and he was talking about that. I told him that I just left the army. He was telling us he was looking at, you know, getting some athletes together for a photo shoot. And for me, I was like, I just thought, well, if something's too good to be true, generally it is.
It is, yeah.
So I didn't think anything of it. And about 3 or 4 months later, I actually called him up and said, so, what's going on with this thing? And ended up chatting for an hour. And about 4 or 5 weeks later, I was on a photo shoot with about 6 or 7 other guys. And by November, we were in all the covers of Men's Health, Men's Fitness, Muscle and Fitness magazine. So it was just kind of a dream come true.
Yeah.
To, you know, suddenly leave the army, start competing, and then start getting in all these magazines, because it's something that I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
When I was reading all these magazines, wondering how on earth these guys got in there. So that's really started the journey with Grenade back in 2010. And, you know, in 6 years, it's just been phenomenal. You know, Grenade has blown up into this ridiculously ginormous, you know, company with some of the best products, you know, that I've ever tasted and seen.
Yeah.
And that quality is just, you know, quality in the products is just getting bigger and better. And, you know, I've been with them since day one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm loyal to the brand.
Yeah.
And I always will be.
So, I mean, you know, we always talk about supplements when we're on the podcast. Give us plug some of the Grenade products, the supplementation that you're currently using that you would really recommend.
So the ones that I take at the moment, I mean, the ones that nearly everyone takes is the Grenade Carb Killer Bars, because
they're massive, by the way.
They are ridiculous.
Dude, they're selling them at the local college down the road from the gym. They are everywhere, dude.
Yeah, and they've just literally launched today the new peanut butter one. So it is, another incredible one. And they've got some more amazing ones. So I try and limit myself to two of those a day.
Right.
And I usually have their Hydro 6 protein, which is very good. It's sort of like a casein isolate blend.
Right.
So that's a really good one, really tasty too. And I have their creatine as well. So there's kind of my three go-to. And if I'm a little bit tired or need a bit of a push, I'll usually have one of their pre-workouts.
Yeah.
The Killer Cola one is not only the most effective pre-workout I've had, probably one of the tastiest. It actually tastes like Coca-Cola, which is great.
I think I've tasted it. Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, so we're doing great. We're about 35 minutes in. I'm really enjoying this, James. I think our listeners will too. So, like I said, most guys are coming into sort of my funnel and they're currently not doing anything and they've come out of the blocks now, January, new year, new me. There's so many things out there. It's overwhelming. I mean, where do these guys start if they haven't done anything in years? What advice? I mean, you're 31, you've got a three-year-old daughter. Obviously you're in great shape. You've been in, you know, not good shape when you ballooned up. What are you going to say to these guys to get them off the couch and get them moving? What are the basic principles that these guys need to to adhere to?
I think I'll start with a quote, and it's sort of the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. Yep. So obviously the first step is obviously to commit to something and be realistic. And that's the most important thing. So many people, at the beginning of the year, they just focus on the outcomes that they want. So I want to be 2 stone lighter. I want to be more successful this. I want to be more successful than that. Now, the trouble with just focusing on the outcome is it's a long way away.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got 3 stone to drop, guess what? If you're just focusing on losing 3 stone, you're going to probably not keep consistent with it.
Okay.
And it's something that I explained a lot about when it comes to, I actually just did a video on this based on an article which I read, and it was talking about environments, and it was talking about anxiety and stress. Now, this is one of the biggest key things for a lot of people with anxiety and stress, is not understanding why they have anxiety or stress. And a lot of it is understanding the difference between a kind of an immediate return environment and a delayed return environment. Now, what I mean by that is you see a lot of animals and you don't see many animals stressed. And the reason that a lot of animals aren't stressed is because they get an immediate return on what they're doing. Now, stress and anxiety is there to motivate you. It's there to get you moving, to get shit done, basically. And what happens with an animal is if it gets stress or tension, it's usually because it's hungry, it's thirsty, or it's getting chased by a lion.
I like it.
So what happens is if they're thirsty, they drink water, the tension and stress goes down, immediate return. They're hungry, they eat some food, immediate return. They're getting chased by a lion, 2 things, either going to get killed by the lion or they're going to get away.
Yeah.
Stress return. Now, what happens with us is we're more in a delayed return. If we've got 10 pounds to lose, if we've got 3 stone to lose, we don't immediately get a return from that. It's the delayed return. So most people, if they're focusing on so much on something that's 3 to 6 to 9 months away, that's where the stress and tension comes, because they're not where they want to be yet. Now, this is where a lot of people go wrong, because they're focused on the outcome rather than the processes. So what we want to do is we want to focus away from being a delayed return environment to an immediate return.
Right.
How we do that is we focus on small wins.
Like
so we don't look to lose 3 stone. We look to lose 1 pound a week. We look to tick off this little box so we get a little immediate return, and we're happy, and we can see that we're progressing. So what I would say to a lot of guys is, okay, tell me your overall goal. Let's lose 3 stone, but let's work backwards. Okay, realistically, we've got 3 stone to lose. We've got 6 months to do it. So let's aim for, you know, a stone every 2 months. What we're going to do is we're going to aim for 0.5 stone a month. What we're going to do now is we're going to break that down into a week. So it's small checkpoints in order to get to your overall endpoint and goal.
Yep. Yeah, I really like that. I really like that. I've noticed this year, just talking to a couple of clients, that they've set, like, what they're announcing that they're going to do, really almost unrealistic things, like I'm not going to drink alcohol for a year. I'm going to do all this extra activity on top of the stuff you set me. And the problem is that most of these people, and it's human nature, are setting these goals round about Christmas and January when they feel totally shit and they're feeling like they need to do something massively extreme. Whereas actually what I've been saying to people this week is actually all you need to do is go back to what you were doing pre-December and give that 7 to 10 days. You're actually going to feel pretty good again. And you actually might achieve your goals over a period of 3 to 4 months. Why would you deprive yourself of having a beer all year? Fine, if you want to do something like that for charity, but if your goal is in April, you might achieve it, and then you can have a beer then, and not beat yourself up because you've set this crazy, silly goal, but you've already achieved one, and now you're depriving yourself of having a beer. Do you know what I mean? It's people come out of the blocks and they're too extreme in January.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's an all or nothing mentality. Yeah. And the reason being is that they've been all in at Christmas. They've kicked the arse out of Christmas. And what's happened is that kind of sliding scale of, you know, extreme restriction to extreme absolute knee-deep in Christmas turkey, they're trying to balance out that equation by bringing it down a little bit. And obviously, usually the best way to do that is to go to extremes. We're all or nothing people.
Yeah.
We're in or we're out.
Yeah.
You know, the word balance to most people doesn't really exist. The word moderation really, yeah, it's a bit, moderation is boring as fuck, basically. So what we're constantly trying to do is we're trying to, you know, go up and down on this scale. And that's where a lot of people go wrong, because they've been conditioned to believe that in order to achieve something that they need to go wholeheartedly into it.
Yeah.
Because if you're not going all in, then what's the point?
Yeah.
But then if you haven't achieved the result with that, then that is the point.
Yeah.
Because you're just focused on the outcome. Now, you may get that because you're focused on the outcome, but then you haven't learned any processes to get there. So what I would say to people is, rather than obviously focus on losing 3 stone, look at 2 processes that you could do per day in order to contribute to that overall goal. 2 that I would recommend is 10,000 steps a day.
Brilliant.
And tracking your food.
Yeah.
5 days a week.
Yeah.
2 things that are very easy to tick off and two things that are very easy to do. If you could commit to doing that to 6 weeks, guess what? You'd probably be halfway, if not all the way to your goal.
Yeah.
Now, the difference that would happen there is that you know exactly how you got there rather than getting there.
Yeah.
So once you get there, the likeliness of you staying there is going to be a lot higher.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to go all in, get the result, and then suddenly go the other end of the spectrum and get back in knee-deep turkey.
I want to talk about the whole step thing because it seems that everyone's gone Fitbit, Garmin crazy. And I think it's fantastic. I bought my partner one for Christmas and I didn't think she was too convinced, but now she's absolutely hooked. You know, she's every day when I get home, I've done my 10,000, you know, the steps have really gone up since I've been rushing around to get the kids back to school. And I'm in the process, I'm going to get one soon. I just want a bit of time to really sit and look at it. But I've spoken to some of the trainers here at the gym that are doing 19,000 steps on a busy day. And you talk about something like NEAT, which I was talking to my group about the other day, it's non-exercise activity thermogenesis or time. And you should never, ever, ever discount those steps that you're doing, you know, because that is what I like to call money in the bank. And the fact that, you know, if you are listening to this now and you're not currently doing anything, just get up and go for a walk. If you can afford to get one of these trackers, then do it. You know, that's a great place to start. Would you agree, Jamie?
Definitely. I mean, I wish 2 years ago I had trademarked the word power walk.
Yes.
Because I don't want to coin it, but I was kind of the first person that was power walking because everyone else was doing HIIT training.
Is interesting. Let's talk about this. Yep.
Everyone was doing HIIT training and I was just walking. I wasn't doing any HIIT training or anything. And then people kept seeing the condition that I was in. They're like, so you're telling me you're not doing any cardio? I'm like, no, I'm just walking. It's because my diet's on point and I'm consistent. At the end of the day, I'm going for a walk. And they're like, so how long do you walk for? What's the time? What's the distance? That's not what the power walk in me is about.
Yep.
It's about getting out of the house early in the morning, listening to a podcast, listening to an audiobook, and getting powered up for the day whilst burning a few calories by walking. An hour and 20-minute walk, I'll burn 500 calories.
Yep.
And the thing is, for me, when I'm really, really lean, things like sprinting, things like high-intensity training completely drains me for the day. So to be able to burn calories without actually thinking about it is fantastic. And that's what most people want to do. Most people want to get the steps up so they're not thinking, oh, I've got to do cardio. Oh, I've got to jump on the treadmill for an hour. It's just this little buzzy thing on your wrist that goes, oh, I've done 10,000 steps. Great. And that gets you into this kind of habit of moving a lot more, which a lot of people don't do. And something that I do love is gamification. You know, it's something that I've spoke about in the book.
Right.
And what fascinated me about game dynamics and gamification, especially when it comes to fitness, was understanding how on earth a 10-year-old will sit down and play Call of Duty for 8 hours and not even blink or drink water. So it was like, well, hang on a minute. If I could get an adult to spend 8 hours doing something as addictive as a game.
That's gold.
And I'm trying to understand how on earth am I going to be able to get a person to understand that with fitness? And I said, if I could master that, I could turn fitness into a game and guess what? I could get a lot more results. So that's what I did. I tried to understand what gamification was and they actually have a model, which I'm going to obviously share with you now.
Right.
So they have what's called the RAMP model, R-A-M-P. So RAMP stands for relatedness, autonomy, mastery, and purpose. These are 4 things in a game which enable you to keep at it. So relatedness is you want to be surrounded by like-minded people. If you're surrounded by like-minded people, you will continue with doing what you're doing because you have the support there, you have the relatability, and you have that motivation. If you've got that in fitness, guess what? That's a box ticked and you're going to continue with the game. Autonomy. We like to believe that we're making our own decisions in life. If someone says you're overweight, you need to lose some weight, more than likely you're going to tell them to fuck off because it's something that you need to make a decision for yourself doing. But just because you need to make that decision doesn't mean that there's people around you that can't help you make that decision. So it's understanding how to motivate someone. You're not going to motivate someone by telling them that they need to lose weight. You're going to motivate someone by showing them the benefits of losing weight, the benefits of it on your life. And that's what I mean by it. I mean, a lot of things that I do on social media, I'm not telling anyone to do anything. I'm doing it myself and showing you how enjoyable it is. Therefore, getting people to go, oh, I'm going to give that a go. It's basically Apple's marketing strategy for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, something that Steve Jobs saw when he left Apple and he obviously joined Pixar was understanding game dynamics. He was understanding, you know, I think their first thing was Toy Story and selling stories. And what I mean by that is that a lot of the Apple advertisement was not telling you to buy an iPod at the time. It was showing a person running, enjoying the iPod. And what was happening, it was getting the consumer to visualize themselves having that product, therefore going out and buying it.
Yeah.
Now, this is the same thing as autonomy when it comes to fitness. People want to market that story, market their change, market how happy they are having this product, which is fitness. And this incentivizes people to make that decision to do it. So for me, that's autonomy. Not telling people to do something, showing people to do something. So that's autonomy. Mastery is like anything. We always want to level up. You know, we always want to get better at something. You know, it's that kind of game dynamic. If you look at any kind of game, you complete it on easy, then you go to intermediate. You complete it on intermediate, then you go to expert. You look at things in business. You look at McDonald's. You go and work at McDonald's. You get 1 star. Now you want 2. Now you want 3. Now you want 4. Look at the military. Lance Corporal. Want to get to a corporal. Want to get to a sergeant. And it motivates you because you've always got that incentive to go to the next level. So that is mastery. And then the final P is purpose. Why are you doing this? What is the reason for you getting in shape? I don't give a fuck if you want abs. I want to know why you're being here. Because having abs sometimes isn't a good enough reason to get in shape. And guess what? When you have abs, then what? You know, you've ticked the box, and where do you go from there? So my own purpose is I have a 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So my purpose is not only to walk her down the aisle, but her daughter too. So regardless if I hit my short and long-term goals, I still have my lifelong purpose, which means I have to stay in shape, I have to stay healthy, I have to stay fit and strong for her.
And longevity, buddy.
So once you understand relatedness, autonomy, mastery and purpose, and then you can integrate that into what it is that you do with your fitness, there's the game dynamic and you've won.
Really, really interesting stuff, buddy. So, guys, just to recap with that, you know, get out and just get your steps. That is the first step, excuse the pun. And, you know, going back to that and the whole game thing, the gamification, it's amazing to see people in my online communities. They're actually, technology blows my mind, friend requesting others and, you know, trying to outdo each other on the steps. I mean, who would have thought this?
Yeah.
It's fucking genius.
But also you look at the ramp model with Fitbit, relatedness. You know, you can all relate to each other because you've got the watch. Autonomy. You see someone's got more steps than you, you want to go out and beat them.
Yeah.
Mastery. Someone's at the top. Someone's number one. I know some people go out for a walk for 3 fucking hours just so they can get to the number one spot.
Yes.
They're like, I beat you. But then they're losing weight. So that's that mastery. And then
fantastic.
It's that kind of purpose.
Yeah.
They have different challenges there. They have different things that go on that incentivize you to do it. So it gives you that kind of purpose. It's that whole gamification, which a lot of these companies are using, which is fantastic because another example from last year is that Pokemon Go.
Oh, it's fantastic. Getting people out walking and, you know, with their kids getting active rather than staring at screens indoors and not moving.
Exactly.
I mean, I've had clients that are telling me in the gym that, you know, at 11:30 the night before, they'd actually hop out of bed because they were only on 9,500 and step and they wanted to get to the magic 10. Well, I think that's brilliant. You know, it's encouraging people to be more active. And guys, if you're listening to this and you're overweight and you don't know where to start, I always say this, you can put one foot in front of the other. Well, most of us can. Get out, get some fresh air. If you can get a tracker and get out and get walking. And it's funny to hear myself say this because I'm a massive advocate of HIIT training. We have a lot of it in our 6-week programs. But, you know, I always like to say, if you're not evolving as a trainer, well, then you're not moving forward. And I've evolved massively. I love my HIIT training now, but I also do see massively where getting your steps in, getting your NEAT in is so critical too.
Yeah, and we'll always preach what we practice, you know, and that's it. If we have a personal enjoyment with a certain way of training, then we're going to favor that with our clients.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that per se. The thing that I've had wrong with that is when people are very closed-minded with fitness. They're saying, no, it's this way or it's no other way. And it's, oh, no, you know, there's more than one way of skinning a cat.
Yeah.
You know, it's great that you're showing people the benefit of that. And if it gets people moving more, then fantastic. But, you know, that's the reason that you have two ears, you know, and one mouth.
I mean, I really like what you said there about you just getting the walking in every day. And my experience of, I started to actually do all the step thing in December. Reason was, is I knew I had a social life back. I was going out for the first time in years with the other trainers and my uni mates, and I had my Christmas parties, and I was going to be drinking a lot of alcohol. Now, I've experienced with, we'll talk about intermittent fasting quite successfully in the past, and it worked well for me. But one thing I didn't really want to do at Christmas was do intermittent fasting. I just wasn't in the right headspace for it. So I said, well, what I'm going to do, Trek, is I'm going to increase my output. And alongside my normal weight train, I'll just increase my output by doing an hour or to 90 minutes uphill power walk every morning, like you with the podcast on. And actually, what I found was I could do this every day. I wasn't beat up from it. Now, if I'd have done HIIT training every day, I'd have been, my central nervous system been all over the place. I also find personally, if I do too much HIIT training, I get sensationally hungry and can't stop. And someone who's had eating issues in the past, that's not good for me. So I'm a real convert. I'm a real convert to this power walking. And you've seen that meme on meme on Facebook, and it says, so you're telling me that you drive to a gym to walk on the treadmill? And I'm afraid I have to put my hands up. I did take the piss out of that, but I now drive into the gym. Ultimately, I'm based at it, but I do get my steps in on that treadmill every day around my current training.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I live like 10 minutes from the beach. So for me, it's the kind of incentive to get up is very easy. You know, I'll download a podcast or an audio book the night before. I'll set myself up to win. So I'll have my socks there, my shoes, my everything there. So as soon as I wake up, I have no excuse. I'm excited because I'm going to listen to the podcast. I get out of bed straight. I've got the clothes on and I'm out the door.
Yeah.
And then I know the benefit that it has and the knock-on effect that it has for the rest of my day.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of habit. You know, understanding the difference between good and bad habits is the reason that you do it so much is because you get a reward from it. The reason that you have your bad habits is because you get a reward from it. At the end of the day, it's awesome going down out on the piss on a Friday night with your friends because you chill out, you feel good, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't contribute to the goals of losing weight. So it's understanding other channels,
yep,
which are positive, which implement basically a reward or a result. I know that I'm in a good place. I feel great when I track my food.
Yeah.
I know I feel good and I'm in a good place when I go out for my walk. Mm-hmm. These are two very healthy habits which I've built up, which kind of damage control me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because if I just track 80% of the time, I tend to stay in pretty good shape. If I make sure that I'm going out for a walk 5 to 6 days a week, then I make sure. Well,
yeah,
last year, you know, I was the leanest, fittest and strongest that I'd ever been.
And were you walking, how many days a week were you walking in AM? Obviously, fasted state as well, Jamie, yeah?
Yeah, so I tend to just literally wake up and just go out the door,
yeah,
usually. And usually walk for about an hour to an hour and a quarter. It's my kind of thinking time too. So my brain literally ignites at that time in the morning. So
yeah,
I have a habit of doing Snapchat knowledge bombs in the,
yeah,
morning.
I've seen it, yeah.
And some of my best kind of work comes from that. I actually spoke out my entire book on Snapchat. So
wow,
when I was doing my first kind of chapter of the book, I spent an entire week knowledge bombing people about habits and routines. The next week was about controlling your environment. The next week was about mapping your motivations. And I would just talk it out. And it's kind of, Snapchat's my kind of therapy, because you absorb so much information on a daily basis, but then you don't find out which bits are relevant to you and how you can articulate it yourself.
Sure.
So many people just regurgitate what they've heard from somebody instead of taking bits which are prevalent to them and sort of realistic to their audience as well. And it's something that I've done for many years now, is that I would take a complex subject, get my crayon out, draw it in crayon, and, you know, tell it to my audience. And it's something that I've always done. It was funny because obviously that's how I've done Mindset with Muscle.
Yeah.
I actually got a 2-star review on Amazon to say that the book was too simple and it felt like I was talking to someone down the pub. And I was like, that's exactly what I was going for.
Great.
You know, trying to turn a complex subject
Make
of psychology, of motivation, and getting the crayons out and making it easy for people. And that's what I did with the book. You know, it's a, if you hardcore read it, you probably read it in about 2.5 2 hours
max. I've said all I need is a couple of hours piece, and that's done.
Yeah. There's no great fillers in there. There's no nothing. It's just actionable points and things that I've learned over the last 4 or 5 years.
Great stuff. All right, Jamie, this is going really well. We're on about 54 minutes. We're going to probably chat for another 10 or 15 minutes, if that's cool with you. I want to change track slightly now. I want to talk to you about what was it like becoming a father, you know, hitting over 30. I know you're young 30, you're 31, not like me, pushing 40. What was it like becoming a father for the first time? How did that affect your sleep, your nutrition, your training? Tell us a little bit how you've sort of maintained the whole work-life balance, being a husband, raising a child, while staying in fantastic shape.
I think the biggest thing that it changed for me was my kind of my balance of selflessness and selfishness. Now, the biggest learning curve for me in 2013 was, before that, I had a strong identity based on being a fitness model. So I had basically, from the time I left the army to 2013, for the first 3 years of doing fitness modeling and competing, my entire self-worth was based on the way that I looked.
Sure.
So if I wasn't in the shape that I was in the magazines, I'd feel like a fraud. And I was a very selfish person. I was very focused on achievement after achievement. And, you know, I was an all or nothing kind of person. So I would get ready for a photo shoot and show, then I'd balloon 20 pounds, then I'd need to find a reason to get back in shape, and then I would put the blinkers back on, go back into selfish mode and go down. When Eliza was born, that balance changed. You know, I became more selfless because it was less about me and more about this other person.
Sure.
But what also happened was, A, I gained 40 pounds. B, I didn't exactly look like the fitness model that I did. But C, my business doubled. And the reason that my business doubled is because I started giving a shit more about other people.
Dude, I hear you totally. Yeah.
And suddenly I realized that I don't need to be this, you know, this fitness ab-looking person in order to grow my business. And the fact that I needed to focus less of my energy on myself and more of my energy on the people that are paying me money and my clients. I had one of the greatest 2013s ever. I transformed so many people, and all my energy was, you know, there, not only because I was eating a lot, but, you know, my energy was focused on my daughter and my clients. And it was a kind of ping moment where, you know, it was that understanding, and especially 2013 was the time I discovered podcasts and started listening instead of talking.
Yep.
That it's all about, you know, what you can give to this world, not what you can take.
Yep.
And that literally changed the game for me, because I used to, you know, wake up in the morning and go, you know, what's in it for me, instead of waking up and going, you know, whose life can I change today?
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about how you juggle all your day-to-day commitments, the gym, the social media side, with, you know, being a father as well, because it's something, you know, that we spoke about off camera. I've got two little boys. They keep me very, very occupied. How do you manage your time with your daughter?
Fact is, I mean, it's difficult. It is very, very difficult, especially last year. Last year was crazy. It really, really was. But one thing that, you know, that I've read a lot about, and one thing that I understand is, I had someone ask me a question about them feeling guilty about working too hard and not being able to see their family and friends, et cetera, et cetera. And one kind of response that I said to them, especially with children, is it doesn't matter how much time that you spend with them. It's the quality of the time that you spend with them.
Yeah.
So if you are away a lot, when you're back, turn your phone off, turn your notifications off, be there.
Yeah.
Something that I didn't do last year.
I
would say with my daughter, yes, you know, I was there, but with the rest of my family and friends, no. You know, they just had this shell that was, you know, trying to get this business off the ground and run.
Sure.
This is something, obviously, you know, one thing I do in December is look at a lot of my successes, which I had a very successful year, but I look at a lot of my failures. One of my biggest failures was not being there and not giving myself enough time to, you know, to be aware of it.
Sure.
So, you know, my response to a lot of people when it comes to balancing is that don't worry too much about being there all the time, just when you are.
Yeah.
actually be there.
I think this is really interesting because obviously we, you know, social media is here to stay. There's no two ways about that. I am terrible for it. I've got so many online groups. What I do, my partner's very understanding. She knows that when I'm on my phone, you know, I'm not looking at, you know, Dave's holiday snaps from Magaluf 1997. I'm contributing into my online groups, but it does have to be managed. A lot of the times before the kids come along, when the kids were very young, I could go home and fire open the laptop. Doesn't happen now. You know, it's Lego, it's this, it's that. And I'll tell you one thing, I had the best Christmas ever since the kids were born because I took 10 days off coaching, apart from the odd boot camp. And it was fantastic just to be there and have the patience to build Lego, to build Hot Wheels, to watch Spider-Man and be totally present. And I was really grateful that, you know, I'd worked hard all year. It allowed me to actually do that. And I had the staff to allow me to actually do that.
I think that's it. I mean, as entrepreneurs and as business people, you have this fear that if you take a week off, then it's all going to go plummeting down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've spent the first 4 years of my business being a one-man army,
yeah,
you know, doing everything myself. But yeah, now it's that realization last year that I've got
a team,
you know, ten staff, and they're quite capable of doing the things that I can do.
Yeah.
Now it's a case of letting go, which takes a little bit of time, and accepting that many people are going to not do it as good as you. Many people are going to make mistakes, but that's how they learn. If you keep doing everything for them, then they're never going to learn.
I'm totally with you.
Coming back, slowly realizing that. And, you know, now I'm focused more on doing things on my business than in my business.
Sure. Great stuff, buddy. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about nutrition. Getting into the last 10 minutes now. You know, for those guys that have followed you on YouTube and on your Snapchat, we know that you pretty much got a very sort of open mind about nutrition. You enjoy all kinds of food, pizza, McDonald's. I seen you putting one of the carb killers in, wrapped in some bacon the other day and cooking it, which was absolute genius.
It looked horrendous, but it tastes nice.
In a time where, you know, January is filled with detoxes and clean eating, and I put my hands up, we very much talk about clean eating. We all know clean eating is just a term for healthy eating. It seems that tracking has become more and more popular now in the last sort of 18 months. Tell us a little bit about, you're in great shape now, tell us a bit about how you maintain your physique. You spoke about the walking, you spoke about the tracking, but what would a day-to-day, we all live by routine, what would a normal day look like currently for you? How many calories are you eating? Where are you getting those calories from? Just purely out of interest for the listeners.
So, you know, my usual diet is usually, I mean, at the moment it's about 2,800, 2,900 calories a day.
Sure.
You know, once I get down to a little bit leaner, it's usually 2 or 3 weeks after Christmas. Then it's around 3,000, 3,200.
What are you currently weighing, Jamie?
I'm currently 196 pounds.
Tall? So, 6 foot?
Yeah, 6 foot. Right. Well, 5'11 and a half, but that's why I spiked my hair up. So.
Yeah.
So for me, it's, you know, I have the same kind of breakfast. You know, I have 100 grams of oats, 150 grams of total Greek yogurt. I have some lemon fish oils in there, 50 grams of M&M, peanut M&Ms, which are really nice.
Every morning?
Every morning.
Lovely.
Yes. I usually have like a 1,200 calorie bowl of oats in that.
Wow.
Then I'll have like a carb killer mid-morning. I usually have a McDonald's wrap of the day for lunch.
Yeah.
And
what's the calories in those for one of them?
About 378. The grilled one's really good. It's got 28 grams of protein. And it is actually probably the inverted commas healthiest thing that you can get at McDonald's.
Yeah. You have two, don't you, sometimes?
Yeah. Okay. That's the two usually. And then in the evenings, even my wife makes chili jacket potatoes, something like that, or I have something then.
Yeah.
Last year for 8 weeks, I had a meal prep company do 3 of my meals a day.
Sure.
Just because of being crazy busy, it was fantastic to have sort of 3 500 calorie meals. So I've got 1,500 calories, and then the rest 1,500 was made up with breakfast and snacks.
Sounds like you're quite carbohydrate rich, your diet currently.
Yeah, I mean, my carbs are usually between 350, 400 grams of carbs a day.
Wow.
Fat's usually about 70 grams, and protein is about 220.
Wow.
I have a very carb-heavy diet.
That works for you, though, I presume. And you've got a lot of lean tissue, so...
It is. And the thing is that I'm very, very passionate about nutrition. And it's not necessarily the actual nutrition itself. It's the psychology behind why people do what they do.
Yeah.
It's the habits, the routines, and it's the identity behind it. One of my quotes from my podcast is, part of that is what you put in your body affects how you look and how you feel. When you understand that food has a direct correlation with your confidence levels, you're obviously going to have an emotional connection with it. So what I explain to a lot of clients and a lot of people is that you've got to do something that you can see yourself doing a year from now based on your habits. You were talking about intermittent fasting before.
Yeah.
Something that I did last year for 6 weeks, just to show people, the benefits, the disadvantages, etc., etc. Now, one thing that I explain to a lot of people, which is great about intermittent fasting, is it keeps a lot of bad habits and it saves a lot of good habits. And what I mean by that is a lot of people that I come across who are new to dieting skip breakfast. Now, most intermittent fasting is a period of 16 hours fasting and 8 hours consuming food. That time period is genuinely between 12 p.m. and 8 p.m. Now, if someone has a bad habit of skipping breakfast, they can keep that bad habit. You're not changing much there. Another bad habit of a person who skips breakfast is to eat shit late at night.
Sure.
Intermittent fasting, of course, if you can't eat anything after 8 p.m., you kind of cancel out that bad habit. Two bad habits, box tick, not changing too much there. One annoying thing with a lot of people on a meal plan or a way of eating is social events.
Yeah.
Now, with intermittent fasting, if you're consuming food between 12 p.m. and 8 p.m., you kind of cover the times where you normally go out for social events, lunchtime, dinner. Also, because you are fasting for 16 hours, the meals and the time between, obviously, 8-hour window means that the food that you consume is generally going to be higher, the actual meal portions. If you're on 3,000 calories, chances are that's 3 1,000 calorie meals a day.
Yeah.
So let's just say you are going out to eat at lunchtime or tea time, you can pretty much eat what you like. So if you think about it from that perspective, intermittent fasting can be fantastic because you've just set one little rich, well, one thing that I say is rules and rituals get results. You get a lot of rules and rituals in there which produce a result. And it's because of all those habits and everything else that that those boxes tick. So with me and with clients, it's getting people to understand the kind of correlation, causation behind diets, not necessarily the crap that a lot of people will convince you that it does. So a lot of people talk about intermittent fasting, they talk about hormones, insulin, all this kind of crap, when in actual fact they should be focusing about habits and routines.
Sure.
A lot of people talk about paleo diet, about caveman and all this crap, when in actual fact they're not really telling people about, the kind of things which paleo can do.
Yeah.
What's good about paleo is that you cancel out an entire macronutrient, which means that you automatically make conscious eating decisions.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you can't eat cake, you're going to lose weight.
Yeah.
Also, a high-fat, high-protein diet usually helps with satiety levels.
Yeah.
It's also very difficult to overconsume on fats and protein.
Right.
So there's lots of fundamentals in there, which would mean that you don't have to think too much about tracking in order to get a result.
Hmm.
So one thing that I say to a lot of people when it comes to nutrition is stop looking at these wizardries and magics and all these things which people try and sell you on a diet, just look at the things that it helps contribute to.
Sure.
And actually look at the kind of psychological reasoning behind why people are so pro this, pro that, pro that.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I was many, many years ago, I sort of got into my CrossFit and very heavy paleo. But I mean, these days, quite a lot older, two kids, I'm very aware that I can't cut out food groups these days. If I want some, if I want some oats in the morning or even some of my kids' shreddies or something like that, even though I've said in the past, no, I will have them because I'm looking at total calorie intake and can I increase my expenditure in the gym with a walk and some training. And having had issues with binge eating in the past, if I cut out certain food groups, I'd just end up going wild.
And it's what I call red button syndrome. If I put a big red button in front of you and tell you not to push it, you're going to want to push it.
Yep.
If I tell you stop, if I said three times, don't think of penguins, don't think of penguins, don't think of penguins, you're going to think of penguins.
Yeah.
So it's understanding that, and it's going to be different for every single person. I've had clients who we can put a little bit of something in, but then they can't do that because it's a kind of trigger food.
Trigger food.
You've just got to be careful with a lot of people. You've got to look at their kind of habits and routines. I know a lot of clients that will turn around to me and go, look, Jamie, I love going out on the piss on Saturday. I'm, and they're like, I'm, look, I'm not going to change that, but I want results. Now, I can sit here and go, well, you know, if you want to get results, you've got to sacrifice, you've got to get, you know, all this bollocks. But the reality is that there are things that you can do in order to kind of maybe not get as quick a result, but you can do what's more or less damage control. And one of the biggest things that I get a lot of clients do is stop looking at calories on a 24-hour basis.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, if you're consuming 2,000 calories a day and you have 2,200, you've set yourself up for failure because you've gone, fuck, I'm 200 calories over, I'm just going to mess it up for the day. But if you looked at that as 14,000 calories for the week, then you haven't really messed it up, because then all you can do is just drop a couple of hundred calories throughout the rest of the week and you'll still hit your overall goals. So a lot of it's just understanding that. But then as with anything, you know, what gets measured gets managed. So if you are measuring on a weekly basis your calorie intake, you're playing a very good game, because you have a lot more flexibility.
Yeah. Very interesting there. You said that, you know, you have a lot of clients that do go out on the piss, and they're on. So these are pretty much all of my clients. A long time ago, I realized I'm not going to change these guys. I'm with a lot of successful businessmen, over 30s guys that do enjoy a drink. So what I tend to do is we factor in for those occasions. Now, I've got my methods. Tell us a little bit about what you would do with said individual who said, Jamie, I can't stop. I want to go out on the piss on a Saturday, but I still want to get results. Tell me about what you would do with those clients.
I would basically try and look at the kind of drinks that they're drinking. So most of the clients I've worked with have pints. Now, what I say to them is just change to bottles, because most of the time, most guys do rounds. So if you're doing a round of average 5 to 6 beers and you're doing 5 to 6 bottles, you've halved your calorie intake, therefore created that kind of knock-on effect.
Sure.
I'm a huge vodka drinker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a shot of vodka is 78 calories. So, you know, it's being able to keep with that kind of social without the added, you know, calories, which obviously is the biggest factor with it. And it's also understanding that kind of domino effect and getting people to understand that. Learning, you know, their limits, learning what it is that causes them to do that. You know, a lot of it is, you know, the thing that I explain to a lot of people is that you are so caught up in the opinion of other people that's affecting your overall result. You know, a lot of people have associated their habits and routines, their kind of reward, with the wrong things. So they say that they need to go out on a Friday night and they need to drink. And I'm like, well, why do you need to drink? Well, all the lads are drinking this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, why do you go out on a Friday night? You don't go out to drink. You go out to socialize. So what you're telling me is that, you know, you need to drink to socialize? I'm like, well, I'm like, well, you don't. You just convince yourself that you do. You have these belief patterns that, you know, in order to have a good time, you need to drink. Challenge yourself to actually go out and have a good social time without drinking. Because guess what? You can.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly realize that actually I go out to catch up with my friends, not to drink beer.
Yeah. Focus on the social occasion. It is very tough, but
it can
be done.
And also, you know, if we go into more of a kind of focus, you know, psychologically on that, something that I mentioned in the book is I don't do shots. You know, pastimes of being younger, being in my army days, I literally don't do shots. And it's about 11 o'clock at night, usually on a Friday. You know, if I'm having a couple of beers, the lads come out, it's Sambuca time. And I always say no. And you have that kind of added peer pressure, as you do with most places. Go on, just one won't hurt. Stop being a pussy, this, that, and the other. And I go, no, I'm fine. So anyway, I get, you know, jibed at. They have the Sambuca, and then they get on with their night. 10 minutes later, I'll go up to the ringleader and I go, are you still mad with me that I didn't have that Sambuca? He turns around and says, what are you talking about?
Yeah, they haven't got a clue,
Because at that very moment in time, it is very awkward, because you want to feel a part of something. And this is the kind of key motivation, you know, the need to belong. But in actual fact, whether you adhere to that or, you know, you say whether you have that shot or not, they don't really care because 10 minutes later, they've forgotten about. However, it matters to you because you've had that extra shot, you've had that extra calories, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you stop giving a shit about the opinion of other people and realize that they genuinely, you know, they're kind of characters in their own story and they really don't care about your life.
Yeah.
They really don't.
Yeah. It's a great point.
And then you're in control of it. You know, you're in complete control of your life. No one cares about your life.
No.
But if you listen to other people, if you give in to peer pressure and that will control your life.
Yeah.
So it's understanding that it's not as easy as me saying that. Understanding that you're going to feel awkward, understand that you're going to feel uncomfortable, but in 6 weeks when you constantly do that, you'll get a result. And guess what will happen? Those people who are jibing you in the pub will turn around to you and go, Jay, you're in good shape. What have you been up to?
Yeah.
And you're quite happy to turn around.
Refusing shots.
Quite happy to turn around and go, you know that thing you've been jibing at me at six weeks to do? I haven't been fucking doing that. Yeah. And what happens is they turn around and ask you for advice because it's that same thing. First they ask you why, then they ask you how.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm going to say manning up a bit. It's just holding yourself fully responsible for your actions.
Yeah.
Understanding that a lot of people have this need to belong, which also is a huge hindrance to them. Because the need to please other people means that you're probably going to take yourself further and further away from your overall goals.
Sure. I did read something really. It's just saying, like, you know, never, don't worry too much about the opinion of others, because they might think about you for a couple of seconds in that moment, but everyone's got their own shit going on. They're not worrying about your life. Trust me, they're not worrying about your life. So
yeah, and it's the same with, you know, I noticed in a gym facility. You know, someone will come in, and most people who go to a gym facility who are new to the gym, especially in January, they're going to the gym because they are immensely vulnerable and insecure. You know, they're there because they want to make a change because they're not happy. So you've got someone in this new environment who is incredibly insecure, wanting a change. Now, what happens is that they go into there and they see someone who's in really good shape, who's staring at them. And they think, oh, they're looking at me, they're looking at me, they're looking at me. Oh, I feel really uncomfortable. What are they thinking? When in actual fact, if they put themselves in the brain of that person's actually thinking, oh, has he seen my calves?
Has he seen
I've got shit calves?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't give a shit about you.
Yeah.
He gives a shit about you staring at him.
Yeah.
When you've got two people staring at each other thinking two different things, that's where the thing is. So it's understanding that generally, if someone's staring at you, they're probably thinking that you're staring at them rather than them looking at you. And when you understand that, you just get on with your own shit.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's great. It's really good. And again, I suppose it's surrounding yourself with people that are going to sort of bring you up rather than bring you down. You know, having this conversation with someone in the gym about it yesterday. If you lived with a group of bodybuilders for a year, and they're, you know, they're all in there cooking their meals and prepping their meals and hitting the gym, that, you know, you're likely going to follow them. You're likely going to take a big interest. Whereas if you live with a couple of guys that are down the pub every night getting takeaways, smoking and drinking, you're likely going to follow them. So it's very much, go on.
It's the same quote. I mean, you're the average of the five people you spend most time with, and most certainly, you know, environment dictates performance. So yeah, it's something that I said in the chapter of the book about controlling your environment.
Yes.
You know, you are literally, so many people don't control their senses. You know, we have five senses: sight, smell, sound, touch and taste. And what goes in them on a daily basis will affect your entire life.
Yeah.
Because your perception of where you currently are in your life is based on the information that you absorb.
Yeah.
Through your eyes, through your ears, through your nose, through your mouth, everything.
Yeah.
So understand where that information is coming from. If it's on social media, if you're following all this negative crap, that's where your attitude's coming from. If you're following all the news, suddenly you'll think that the world's going to cave in next week.
Totally.
If you are in the if you're in the car listening to the radio, same thing. You know, if you're reading the Daily Mail and the Sun and all that crap, then guess what? You know, all of these things are going to contribute to the negativity in your life.
Yeah.
If you can quite quickly change that by unfriending all these people that are affecting your mood. Stop listening to the radio, start listening to podcasts and Mark's very good, you know, Mark's awesome new January podcast. And, you know, start thinking positive thoughts, start listening to people, start hanging around people who are not whinging about life, who are excited about life. And guess what? Your attitude will change very quickly too. Yeah.
I think it's very interesting what you say about the environment. I've often said I'm very lucky. I'm in a gym environment. I'm surrounded by trainers that are, you know, generally in healthy food and training, and it's very, very positive. It is hard when you meet guys that are, you know, I started to train these two guys before Christmas, and they're working in a male predominantly environment, and they just said, basically, just think in the office, it's like Wolf on Wall Street, but with cake and pizza. And everyone's like, if you're not eating cake and pizza, it's why? And, you know, I totally get how difficult that can be.
Yeah, it's that kind of herd mentality and the need to belong.
Yeah.
You know, it really, really is. But then, you know, one thing I say is, you know, do you want to be a sheep? Do you want to be like everybody else?
Yeah.
you know, understand that it's okay to be different.
Mm.
You know, understand that sometimes you don't need to fit in.
Yeah.
However, if everyone's got what you want, then they might be doing the right thing, but the chances are that they haven't.
Yeah.
And they're doing the things that are taking you further away from your overall goal. So if you want the things that you want, you've got to do things differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. And again, what you talk about, you know, with the news and things like that, one of the guys that has changed my life is a motivational speaker called Bob Proctor, contributed to a book called The Secret. Myself and my business partner, Anthony, we flew to see him in Arizona in 2015. It was actually on the back of that we set up the global community, which now got close to 10,000 guys in it. And one thing he was saying is, you know, if you watch the news, just like you said, you will believe that the world is ending. And, you know, whilst there's some terrible things going on in this world, they are isolated incidents. And all around the world, there are hundreds of millions of people doing great things. You know, there are schools being built in Africa every day, but you don't hear about that because it's good news. So again, you know, we are going slightly off tangent, but if you're watching the news, it's just going to put you in a negative vibration. And you're right, you're going to go around thinking bad thoughts, and that's not going to help. So yep. Great to end up with a little bit of psychology like that, Jay. So we're gonna wrap up in a couple of minutes. It's been great. I've really enjoyed the mindset stuff. I've given the lads some really great value there. Just tell us a little bit more about the Mindset with Muscle book, which is actually becoming a bestseller on Amazon. Tell the guys a little bit about it, where they can pick it up, obviously apart from Amazon, and tell us a little bit more about where they can see you on social media channels and your plans for 2017.
Okay, so just a quick one. With the Mindset with Muscle book, it is basically Mindset with Muscle. What I say about the book is it sets some reps for the brain. So many people exercise in the gym and build muscle, but they don't exercise their brain and, you know, understand their thoughts, their feelings, and the reason that they do things. This book is a kind of transformational book that takes you from being honest with yourself, understanding habits and routines, understanding your motivators, and understanding how to write stuff down and action it and be a man or woman of your word. So that's Mindset Muscle. It's done really well in 8 hours. I went from 1388 in the Amazon charts to number one. So I think it was the fastest bestseller that my publishers ever worked with, which was fantastic. And yeah, it's the most amazing thing ever. Really is. To see that people are posting the book has been fantastic. With regards to social media, every single thing's exactly the same. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. I do a lot of knowledge bombs in the morning on Snapchat. I tweet a hell of a lot. I do a lot of live streams on Facebook. They're all at Grenade J. I too have my own private Facebook group called the Grenade J. I've just changed it now to the Grenade Fit Academy. So what we are doing in there is we're live streaming workouts. We have different themes for the day. We have nutrition days. Post loads of recipes, loads of videos in there. I do lots of Q&As. And we've just focused on the three fundamentals, which is nutrition, training, and mindset. 2017, I'm going to be doing lots of tours all around, really, the world. Off to China in March.
Wow.
Doing a couple of American tours. I'll go to Vegas for the Fitness Expo. I'll be at the Body Power Fitness Expo in May. I'm doing another crazy charity event. Last year, in November, I broke a world record. I pushed 140 kilo sled for 24 hours and beat the 4-man world record. Wow. I just smashed that in 22 hours. So it was nice to do, but the greatest thing ever was to raise just under £12,000 for a charity. But I've set the bar now, and I've just submitted my next world record, which I'm going to be announcing very, very soon. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be another charity event middle of the year, and focusing on growing Grenade Fit. You know, what we say is this is the world's first online gym. We're focusing on bringing what it is that we do here to the rest of the world. So it's a case of we've got some awesome digital products being launched at the end of January, a new home workout program, a new fat loss program, and we're just going to continue doing exactly what it is that we do. But if you want to check that out, it's www.grenade-fit.com.
Perfect. Jamie, it's been a real pleasure. We've got 1 hour and 22 minutes of absolute fire. We'll wrap up soon, and I will get my tech guy to add all the jingles. We'll get this out there on all our social media platforms, and hopefully it'll be a really top listener. I just want to say a big thanks, buddy. I know you're a busy man, family man. I know exactly how it is, and you've taken this time out, literally responded to me within 5 minutes getting on. So I really appreciate it, because we've not actually met before today. I'm really grateful to you. I wish you all the best for this year. And guys, make sure that you're following Jamie. You get his book. He drops some awesome knowledge bombs there. Hope you get some great value from it, guys. We're going to be bringing you these podcasts every fortnight. I've got a great guest lined up for a fortnight's time. And don't forget, guys, Train with Treggs live every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. You get the opportunity to train live with me doing our signature bodyweight kettlebell workouts. I'll be doing them live from Lander Fields in Cardiff. We'll be promoting the workout 4 days in advance with some technique video just so you can get your mind on it. So when you come, you're ready. Obviously, we're going to do a lot of kettlebell stuff. I'm not really going to be delving into the technique on the day. That's for you to watch the videos in advance and be ready. So we're hoping that's going to help grow 30 plus men's fitness in 2017. We're really pumped. There's loads going on. Transform 100 at the minute with our 10 new clients at each individual boot camp across the country. And just spreading the message that it's never too late to get up off the couch and get you moving, guys. So once again, thanks for tuning in and listening to me and Jamie. Jamie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you ever so much.
And guys, I'll talk to you soon. Keep trucking and have a great day, whatever you're up to.